to Hacky Leadership, the podcast that explores career development insights in the insights and market research industry. I'm your host, Lyubov Ruchinskaya, and today we have a very special guest joining us. He's the founder, principal consultant at Wish Insights Strategy and the former vice president of Insights Colgate, senior insights executive at Procter & Gamble, Gillette, Unilever, a brilliant coach and a trusted expert in leadership. Please welcome Dan Wish. Hi, Dan.
Happy to be here.
So, Dan, thank you so much for being with us today. And it's an absolute pleasure for everyone and for me in particular to have you today on the show. So let's dive right in. Throughout your leadership journey, you have achieved remarkable results and made a significant impact in your field, in the industry. You changed also the lives of people you worked with for better. And I would like to ask our conversation today with a very simple and maybe at the same time, very big question. What are the three elements of your success that have been key to standing out and achieving these results?
Sure. And I've been thinking about this. I think three broad areas, and I'm sure we'll dive into them. The three broad areas include developing a strong team. Right, both collectively and individually, fostering a partnership with the business that is really focused on driving results, business results, and proactively addressing and managing conflict.
Fantastic. So one aspect I remember from working with you, your outstanding talent. In finding the talents in others and helping them to grow. So can you share some insights on how you develop strong, unified teams and how you help young professionals and everyone around you to discover their own superpowers and to shine?
Yeah, sure. So I think the first thing that I would do is bring the team together, right? I would have core objectives and key areas that I want to focus on, but we need to co-author and co-own the objectives. That way people feel part of it rather than being dictated to. So that's the first thing. So really co-develop, co-own where we want to go as a function and how we're going to help the business. Beyond that, I really try to get to know the people on the team professionally, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, but equally important on the softer side, personally, what makes them tick, right? What's important to them outside of, there's an outside life and it impacts a professional life. So understand the holistic person and what their passions are. And then I would align leadership opportunities where there's the intersection of their passion and their strength, right? So you're going to get a lot more traction if I gave you an assignment that you were really passionate about and knowledgeable about, because you have confidence and you would have passion to do the project, not only correctly, but really impactfully. Also, it's critical to set clear individual goals and for the year, but also career development and address that and have open communication on a regular basis. Life circumstances change, priorities, just because you want to move to Europe and leave Europe 1 year, you may want to stay laterally and stay in the geography for a certain amount of time. And that's not wrong. It changes, right? And so, but I can't champion your developmental needs if I don't know what they are, right? So that's important. And then beyond that, identify the high potentials. So you're addressing everyone's needs, but who are the most likely future leaders of division, VPs, and have another layer of development, established mentors, have more frequent touch bases with them, and really make sure that they feel looked after. What's also critical is having your team's back. So I want all the fighting and active discussions internally. But when we go in public and someone's presenting, so if I have a junior person presenting at a budget review and they're being challenged, I'm just not going to sit back and allow them to be challenged if they're having trouble answering, right? I jump in and I would have their back. It's also important, you know, a key job when you're managing a large group is removing obstacles and allowing your team to spend time on value-added rather than non-value-added activities. A couple other thoughts. When offering feedback, if you get a presentation, don't change something that's correct to something that is also correct, but more in the way you would address it. Add input to enhance the deliverable, and only change whether it's wrong, right, that you're going to lead to wrong business results, because you want to encourage individuality and ownership. If you do that, you're going to demotivate your team member. Last two thoughts on this is allow your team to get exposure. If they're owning a project and they've led it and they've gotten great feedback internally, there's nothing more demotivating than to see then your boss or your boss's boss present this outside and take credit, and no one really knows the hard work that you did. So it's very important that they get exposure for the work that they're doing and celebrate success, right? The ultimate thing is, don't just assume that's a given. Celebrate successes, because ultimately the success of your team is a direct reflection on yourself. And you should take equal satisfaction in how well that your team members are doing.
That's fantastic recommendation. As my ex-boss in Electrolux said, Edwin, he said, team comes first. And we need to stay very much focused on how much we are investing in growing our own teams. But at the same time, being in Insights Global Professionals, so we have exposure to work with different departments and with marketeers, so with very senior people, presidents, vice presidents across different geographies. And I'm very curious to learn and to let everyone learn from you how you manage to build the strong partnership with marketeers. So how did you expand your presence working with other departments, not necessarily having being enabled with the direct report line or with the budget that you have and you can spend on the projects? So how you use your soft skills to empower and to influence the conversations?
So let me unpack that. I think the first thing is developing a really strong and trusted relationship with your business partners, right? Because ultimately you have your team to enable us to do great things and come with impactful, connected results. But if you're not trusted by your business partners, then the likelihood of it being implemented is much lower. And ultimately we could have great ideas, but if they're not implemented and they don't impact the business, then it's like a tree falling in the forest, no one's there to hear it, right? So the first thing is engaging with and building that trusted relationship with senior leaders, that whether it's the VP of marketing or the president of oral care, understand what their priorities are, give and take, understand how they work and how they'd like to be communicated with and get information, because there's no one way to do that. And if you address everyone the same way, it might be optimal for one, but suboptimal for others. I've had leaders that want daily quick check-ins. I've had ones that want formal monthly, and then that stop by as needed. I've had leaders that want me in every single meeting, no matter what, and then I have to manage that. I have others that I have to fight to be in meetings. So you really have to understand kind of dynamics and understand how you want to work with them. Another important thing within the insights function is for you to think like a general manager. Don't just think a silo in consumer insights or analytics. Understand, put yourself in the shoes of the president of division, of the president of global, of VP of marketing. Understand all aspects of the business holistically. Supply chain, finance, R&D, competitive dynamics. They'll help you in a couple different ways. One is when you're developing your recommendations, you understand where it fits and what recommendations are most likely to be implemented. but also would allow you to more proactively identify areas that you can help, right? It's, you know, you get credit to say, okay, look, here's an issue and we have to do a new product development and you develop a great plan. That's great. But if you identify an unmet need or a study that was not identified, and then it really impacts business, that's proactively impacting the business. And that's really where you want to go. And when you're doing this, you should be establishing the need. It should almost be a given that you have a seat at the table, right? It's very important. And it's very hard to get this general manager holistic impact if you're only brought in when there's a direct insights question, right? So, and when you're not, and sometimes some managers, it's not second nature. They weren't brought up in that. And so you have to show the value that you're adding, but also have non-confrontational discussions with them and say, this is why it's important. And just an early antidote, early on in my career, I had a director of marketing that just wouldn't include me in advertising meetings, right? And I was early career and they said, you know, it just wasn't on his mind. I don't think it was something that was really intentional. It just wasn't in the thought process. So I just started showing up. Probably doesn't work, and I'm not advocating you to just barge into meetings, but I showed up. He looked at me for a second, didn't say anything. I added value. The next meeting, I showed up. Same thing. The third time, I was invited, right? So there's a lot of different ways to do it, but it's important that you have a seat at the table. You also need to partner early, right, and engage with the team when developing plans. So it should be integrated. It shouldn't be an afterthought. You shouldn't get a couple bullet points from the marketing team saying we need to look at this and now let's figure out the budget. Really have ongoing discussions and really integrate the plans into how we do things. And it's also important not to take or accept directives. What I mean by that is just being an order taker. You know, then it becomes a transactional relationship. You don't want them just to say, Luboff, I need you to do a idea screening test. You want them to say, listen, I have a business issue. What's the business issue? These are my learning objectives. And then you come back with the best solution for that. So that's more of a strategic partnership relationship. Being people-centric, right? You need to be really focused on the broader context of people's lives and where your product fits. You know, we spend 40, 50 plus hours on categories or products that people probably think of 30 seconds a week or 2 minutes a week, right? So how do we fit in with a broader context is important. And what's critical is connecting the dots, right? So anyone can deliver a result saying that 70 is greater than 60, right? But not everyone can take those results, connect it with three or four of the learning points and some emerging trends and connect the dots with a impactful business-driven recommendation. A couple other thoughts, and then I'll be quiet on this topic or answer any questions. It's important. It's not always easy, but challenging decisions, right, that you feel would negatively impact the business. And how you do that is different, right, in what forum, big forum, one-on-one. But that's your job, right? Your job is to look at things and come and help the business to the best possible result. There are going to be times where a decision's made that you don't think is optimal. But if you don't say anything, then there's no chance that that's going to be change. So ultimately, all this leads to being viewed as an essential strategic partner that your partners almost wouldn't think of having a big meeting without you there, right? And ultimately leading to more informed business decisions for a more profitable outcome.
So Dan, as a leader with a global role, you successfully connected with geographic heads that didn't report to you, and you were able to drive a global agenda in a very diverse market. Could you share some insights into your management style that help you navigate these challenges and achieve common objectives?
Yeah, so I think the first thing that's important is to meet individually with the leads in each division, right? The key players, whether it's insights, general manager, and really understand the individual dynamics in the division, priorities, challenges. So you understand where they're coming from and what's important to them. Coming off of that, so I would have monthly or frequent connects with the key players in each division. But beyond that, I would develop a connected network. And bringing these people together, they don't often talk to each other and have the opportunity to understand wins, challenges, impact on new suppliers, and so forth. So there's a benefit immediately to connecting people that are doing similar jobs but in other geographies. And it also allows you the ability to cut through a lot of different conversations. So I could have six individual conversations on some topic, but bring one together and have it all at once and hear feedback together. So that was important. I had a monthly cadence of bringing leaders together across the globe, that dotted line into me, but then solid line into me. And what's very important is that you, the global group, would provide equal or more value back to the divisions, because if they feel that they're just giving and giving and they're not receiving anything back, the phone will ring. They're like, I don't want it. They're just, Dan is just going to ask me for something else. I don't get any benefit from this. You ensure there's a give and take, not just a take relationship. And then when you're developing a global agenda, you want to align the agenda with the teams, right, overall, but also assign leads based on divisional priorities. Just like within the team, you want to give projects on passion points and things that matter. You want to, if you're giving LATAM lead a project, you want to make sure that that's really important for LATAM. And so they're going to take ownership and then give the results and communicate challenges to the rest of the globe or lead that globally. And then lastly, look for opportunities to reduce overlap and redundancies, right? To allow the teams to spend more time on fewer, bigger projects and not have six different people working on a very basic project.
Fantastic. It's very rich, the advices that you are sharing, in particular for people who are driving the global agenda and at the same time cultivating the positive environment with the regional heads. So my next question is about the positive climate. So in your leadership journey, you have been praised for creating a positive climate within the project, even in the face of conflict of interests and difficult conversations. What are some of the secrets behind your ability to foster such an environment?
Yeah, so a couple things, Lubov. If I'm in a room and you're presenting, or in your smaller environment, one-on-one, two or three people, look for nonverbal cues, right? A lot of times people will say a lot more with their face and their gestures than they will with their mouth, right? So identifying potential areas of conflict or non-alignment and then addressing that and just asking open questions. Say, okay, do you have any issues? Do you feel aligned? When you ask the direct question, you're more likely then to say, okay, yes, but I have a concern in this area. You get that out in the open rather than have someone leave the room with concerns, right? And then as I'm trying to align, say, five divisions on a global project, everyone's likely going to have a slightly different take on what's important, how to address it, and so forth. So say there's three divisions that really have different opinions. I would have each of them express their concerns or their suggestions. Make sure that they feel listened to, right? Make sure that they feel listened to. And I would drive for a solution that doesn't compromise the overall approach, but addresses concerns, key concerns, as much as I can. So when people feel that not everything, and they know that there'll be compromises when you have a global approach. But if they feel listened to, they'll be much more likely to join hands from a global, on a global initiative. Couple other thoughts on this is, if you know you're heading into a big meeting and there's potential to have conflict, I would look to pre-align, right, or have a pre-discussion with key players and try to answer questions or concerns ahead of time. This way, when you go into the larger meeting, they're much more likely to be aligned with you, and it lead to a productive outcome rather than having everyone addressing concerns in a larger context. And very similar, you know, how you interact with people should be adjusted also. There's certain people that if you address concerns in a large group, they will never back down, right? Because that's a sign of weakness, or they would see that as a sign of weakness. Others are very open to that and say, okay, but you have to have constructive points. So understand how best to address people when there's conflicts, and adjust based on how that individual person. And then lastly, you know, be direct and voice issues, major issues that you have or key issues, but don't just address the issue. Come with solutions, right? Say, hey, listen, I have an issue. I understand you have an issue, or if I have something that I want to talk about, say, look, and this is why I'm having an issue with this, but I have an idea of how to improve that. Would this make sense if we did A, B, and C? So you're not just complaining, you're coming with a constructive conversation with actionable solutions.
Fantastic. So we are moving ahead to my last question, and this is one of my favorite ones. It seems that your approach to leadership is clearly guided by strong values. Could you tell us which values best demonstrate your approach to leadership? And if there is any role model, either from the past or the present, that excites you and inspires you, who has, like, you know, make an impact in your leadership style, please share it with us.
So, I think it's a good question about the person. I don't think it's one person. I think throughout my career, there's things that you pull from different people. I really like the way this person managed conflict or team building aspects and so forth. So I think as you know, you look at your leadership journey as a continued development, right? And always be open for ways to improve and things that you want to borrow or incorporate and internalize as your own. So I don't know if I modeled after one person. I think it's a composite of a lot of different impactful people. And also you learn even more from people that don't do it well, right? Or areas it's like, wow, if I ever have an opportunity, I'm not going to treat my people this way, or I'm not going to drive. You can command or demand alignment, right? And it gets tiring if you're always demanding it, right? And say, I'm a VP, and so you must do it. It's like, I'm the parent, and do it because I said so, versus we should do this, and here's the mutual benefit that we get out of it type thing. So, but a couple of thoughts on values. Caring is important, right? I think we talked about this, and caring person professionally and personal life. The team, individual is important, but the team dynamics are critical. So I don't want 40 individuals working in 40 different silos, because you're not going to be productive, even if they're all high performers. I want people to be working collectively and building off of strengths of team members. Focusing on personal growth, because people want to know that they're adding to the business, but they're also going to, there's a future and there's personal growth that's going to come. And ultimately, everything we should be doing ultimately should impact the business, right? If we're just developing nice, pretty charts and presenting it and we feel good about that, that only goes so far.
Fantastic. That is truly inspiring. And all of our guests would be asked the same questions in the end of our podcast, because we are slowly moving to the end of the conversation. Then now, as wrap up this engaging conversation, what advice would you give to insights professional inspiring become influential leaders in the insights and market research industry, and in general to people who want to grow in their fields?
Yeah, so a couple thoughts. Be relentlessly curious and look for opportunities for personal growth. Be your own biggest advocate. If you're not advocating for yourself, how can you expect others to be advocating for yourself? And actively look for mentors and people that you want to aspire to emulate in some ways and foster that relationship. That's one area. The other one is being open and actively seeking new approaches. And insights, it's changing even more very quickly these days, right? The move to machine learning, analytics, AI, social listening, you know, there's new suppliers, approaches, agile, and so forth, that if you just limit yourself to trusted approaches, you're going to be outdated quickly. So you really want to stay up on it and to incorporate and test and learn and adjust and bring in new approaches where it makes sense. And lastly, you want to proactively look to add value, right? Don't just be an order taker, right? And ensure, and we said this a couple of times, ensure your actions as much as possible lead to implemented business actions and positive results. So don't just feel happy about presenting and say, I did a good job. Here are the three things that I want the business to take away. You know, do less projects, but follow that through and say, okay, well, where are we with this? And what other information do you need? Do you need it presented in a different way? Because ultimately we're measured by the value we add to the business, not the insights that are brought in. The insights need to lead to action. And if they don't ultimately, then it will be less impactful as a function.
Fantastic. That is truly inspiring, especially what you have told about being order taker. It's very important not to be also order giver. Like you, if you don't expect this from others, you should not behave like this to be a role model. So this conversation was truly inspiring, and it's full of wisdom comes from your tremendous experience working in different organizations and going through different cultures and kind of nurturing your own leadership style. So thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's great talking with you.
And that concludes today's episode's Hack Your Leadership with our special guest, Dan Wish. We hope you enjoyed our conversation with him and gained valuable insights on effective leadership. Join us next month for another exciting episode. Until then, stay curious and keep hacking your leadership style on a daily basis. Thank you.